Today's scripture reading is Proverbs chapter 9, verses 1 through 10. Wisdom has built her house. She has hewn her seven pillars. She has slaughtered her beast. She has mixed her wine. She has also set her table. She has sent out her young women to call from the highest places in the town. Whoever is simple, let him turn in here. To him who lacks sense, she says, "Come, eat of my bread and drink of the wine I have mixed. Leave your simple ways and live and walk in the ways of insight. Whoever corrects a scoffer gets himself abuse, and he who reproves a wicked man incurs injury. Do not reprove a scoffer, or he will hate you. Reprove a wise man, and he will love you. Give instruction to a wise man, and he will be still wiser. Teach a righteous man, and he will increase in learning. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is insight."
I'm on now. Okay. I just checked it a moment ago. I was on. Anyway, as I was saying, Barb, on behalf of the congregation this morning, your brothers and sisters, we're pleased that you are with us this morning. Technology is wonderful and can be wonderful and such a blessing. And so we're pleased to be with you this morning, Barb, and hope this will be a blessing to you this morning in being here with us. Fear is a very uncomfortable feeling at times. When someone kicked in our back door when we lived in Memphis years ago, I was in bed and my two little ones were in bed. And fortunately, Kim was out of town that weekend, so she didn't have to experience this. But it was a very frightening and unsettling experience. Nothing happened. They didn't think anyone was home. And when I got up and started slamming some doors, they ran off. But still very unsettling. And after that, every night, I slept a lot lighter than I ever had in my life. Every time I heard anything, I would get up and I would look out the windows. And we actually ended up installing a security system in our house as a result of that. There are times when fear can be a hindrance. That occurs when we fear something with which we have no need to be afraid. And I can still remember when I was a toddler, I was in my grandparents' house, and I don't know, I must have been sick in some way, and my mother was trying to get me to take a pill and swallow it whole. Now, up until this point in time, I had been used to chewing baby aspirin, and that's what I figured. But this time, she wanted me to swallow a pill whole, and I thought, you got to be kidding me. I'll choke to death. What are you trying to do to me? And so I cried, and I resisted, and I cried, and I resisted. But my mother was so persistent, she would not take no for an answer. And so after a long time of tears and refusing, I finally said, all right, and I did it. And then after that, I went, oh, that was easy. Well, I don't know what I was so afraid of. We often fear the unknown because we don't know, obviously, how it's going to turn out. You know, we don't know if it's going to be enjoyable. We don't know if it's going to be painful. We don't know if it's going to be embarrassing. And two of those three are not good. We don't like pain and we don't like to be embarrassed. And so we fear that for which we are unfamiliar. And the only way to conquer that is for you to do that very activity that you fear. So our fears often hinder a lot of things, but they can often hinder our spiritual growth. Fear can paralyze us into doing nothing and taking no action when we really should take action. So this morning I want to talk to you a little bit about the fear you need to have. And actually I've been touching on it in the past weeks. So you have an idea. Because this fear has the opposite effect. It does not hinder you. It does not hinder your spiritual growth. It actually promotes your spiritual growth. And you heard it in the last verse that Chris read a moment ago. Proverbs 9:10. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is insight. Now, most people will agree that the fear of the Lord actually means respect and reverence and not being, you know, terrified. But I want you to listen to Job as he responded to one of his so-called friends in chapter 13, verse 11. Job said, "Will not His majesty terrify you? And the dread of Him fall upon you?" And the Hebrew word translated terrify, it kind of means to be startled, you know, like sort of when someone just scares the living daylights out of you. And we know from Exodus 33, when Moses asked to see God's glory, God responded by saying, "You know, I'm going to let you see my goodness, but you cannot see my face. For man cannot see me and live." Now, I don't think it means we'd be terrified, but we get the idea that God is such a magnificent being that He is beyond our ability to comprehend, beyond our ability to be able to encounter Him in human form. And it would be more than we could physically or emotionally bear just to be in His presence. And it would take our life. The author of Hebrews, in chapter 10:31, speaking of God's vengeance, wrote this. He said, "It is a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God." And we read that. We go, well, how could it be? How could it be a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God? Isn't He a God of love? How could that be a fearful thing to fall into His hands? You know, we like to think about God in terms of love and grace and mercy, but we sometimes forget, or put it out of our mind, that God is a God of wrath. And according to Romans 1:18, His wrath is being revealed against ungodliness in this world. And someday, it's going to be poured out for the final time. And it's going to be poured out full strength on all the ungodliness in this world. And that's why Proverbs 3 verse 7 teaches, "Don't be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and shun evil." And fearing God, it doesn't just have to do with reverence and respect. But it also has to do with fearing His wrath and power. We actually need to be terrified of the consequences of disobedience and judgment. Consider Pharaoh, for example, and the consequences of his lack of fear. Remember when Moses approached him about letting God, you know, asking Pharaoh to let God's people go out into the wilderness so that they could go worship? He refused 9 times. Why? Well, he had a hard heart, for one thing. He didn't really fear the power of God. He didn't fear the consequences of God's judgments because he said, "Who is the Lord that I should obey His voice? I don't know Him." So when some of Pharaoh's magicians could mimic some of God's power, like, you know, turning a stick into a serpent and water to blood, you know, in his mind, he didn't have a reason to fear God. But the consequences of his lack of fear were devastating. You know, the Jews plundered the Egyptians, and all the Egyptians experienced the death of a firstborn child. All because he didn't fear God's judgment. Fearing God creates for us a foundation on which wisdom can be built. That's what we've been reading. Wisdom turns away from evil and does what is right. That's why fearing God is the beginning of wisdom. If you don't fear God, you don't turn away from evil. In fact, it goes much deeper than just turning away from evil. Because Proverbs 8:13 says, "The fear of the Lord is hatred of evil." If you recall in stage two, if you were here for that message of the deformation of character in Proverbs, it was pointed out that when folly becomes sport, folly or disobedience has become desirable to that person. And, you know, that's not a huge shock. Jesus did say in John 3:19 that, you know, the world loves darkness. You know, most children are afraid of the dark. Some of us adults are still afraid of the dark. But we want to teach our children to, we do want to teach them. We want to teach them to fear the darkness, not the darkness of night. We want to teach them to fear the darkness of evil. We want them to hate the darkness of evil and love the light. Now, you know, I know some of you might be thinking, you know, but I don't want to scare my kids into becoming Christians. You know, and I get that. But, on the other hand, God himself used fear as a motivator. He used fear to motivate Israel. He told them in Deuteronomy 28 that if they don't obey the law, that curses would come upon them. Curses in the form of disease and fever and drought and blight and boils and tumors and their crops won't grow and their enemies would destroy them. And that isn't even the whole list. That's just a few. Jesus used fear to motivate. In Luke 12, verse 4 and 5, he said, I tell you, my friends, don't fear those who kill the body and after that have nothing more that they can do. But I'll warn you whom to fear. Fear him who, after he is killed, has authority to cast into hell. And of course, the one who has authority to cast into hell is God. So if God used fear at times to motivate, it must be okay for us then to use fear at times to motivate. Because fear is kind of a built-in safety mechanism. You know, as I mentioned earlier, fear encourages, you know, it makes you cautious, or it should. The fear of being burned encourages you to be cautious with fire, right? Now, I've had people say to me, you know, when I was growing up, all I heard was hell, fire, and brimstone. And if you didn't do what you were commanded to do, you were going to hell. Not to mention how true that is, but I think most of us would agree that the pendulum has kind of swung in the other direction. You know, because most of what you hear and read nowadays has to do with the love and the grace and the mercy of God, which we desperately need to hear. But I think it's what most of the time our itching ears want to hear. We want to hear that side of God. We like that love and we like that grace and we like that mercy of God. And of course, without it, we wouldn't be saved. But I wonder sometimes if the pendulum hasn't swung a little too far. God is love. He is merciful. He is forgiving, but he's also a God of wrath. And we don't want to forget that because his wrath is coming. In fact, you see it every day. You see God's wrath in the form of people suffering for their sins. You see God's wrath in nature through hurricanes, earthquakes, and all kinds of natural disasters. And if you don't believe me, if you don't think that's God's wrath, I encourage you to read the book of Revelation. And if that's too daunting a task for you, then just open your Bible to the minor prophet Haggai and just read chapter 1. You need to fear God. I need to fear God. Wisdom teaches that that fear is the key to gaining wisdom. It is the beginning of wisdom. And if God's wrath does not terrify you, and what I mean by that is you live a pretty self-indulgent life, complacent life, or you're totally wrapped up in your career and your secular activities, therefore your involvement in God's work is pretty minimal. I mean, it's basically when you can fit it into your schedule. If that might describe your life to a certain degree, I question whether you understand the fear of God. I question whether you truly fear God. If that sort of describes you, I really would encourage you to do some self-examination. Because you're not saved by grace alone. In fact, you are saved by grace through faith, Ephesians 2:8. Found, and that's found only in I'm getting ahead of myself. And according to the letter of James, faith without works is dead. So you're not saved by grace alone. You're saved by grace through faith. And faith without works is dead, according to chapter 2, verse 14. That faith cannot save you. The phrase grace alone is not found in the Bible. The phrase faith alone is found in only one place, and that is in James 2, verse 24. You see that a person is justified by works and not by faith alone. The fear of the Lord is not just a state of mind. It is a condition that generates action and obedience. It spurs one on to seek the wisdom of God. You know, many of you, as far as I know, really are not engaged in any ministry in this church. And I'm not talking about those of you who have trouble getting out of bed in the morning, okay? Christianity is not just about keeping your own life pure. God has commissioned you to work in His vineyard. And now, I'm not suggesting you have to prove anything to me. I'm just sharing some of my observations. I'm not with most of you during the week, so you could be doing a lot of good works in the kingdom that I don't know about. I don't know what all's going on in your lives. All I want to do is to remind you that God's wrath is real. And if your faith is not demonstrated through your works, you better make some changes. According to Derek Kidner in his commentary on Proverbs, the fear of the Lord is not just a step along the way, it is a controlling influence along the way. If God is not the controlling influence in your life or your child's life, then the world will be. Now that's a scary thought. Satan's goal is for the world to be the controlling influence in your life and your child's life. And since you can't remove yourselves from the world, or nor should you really, what you need in a sense is a wisdom filter for you and your child's ears and eyes. You know, every month or so, it's recommended that you change the filter in your furnace. You know, to keep the dirt particles from clogging up the mechanics in your furnace and to keep that from recirculating into your house. You know, and depending on the type of filter it is, you know, it prevents the worst of it. A filter. It's filters in a lot of things. Before the events and the ideas of the world reach the eardrums and retinas of your child's eyes and your eyes and is transported to the brain, we want them to pass through sort of a God wisdom filter that enables them to identify whether it's right, wrong, good, or bad. I can remember back in the early 90s when we were living in Memphis. One day we invited a little boy, Daniel, to come over to our house and play with our son, Carter. I think they were around 4 years old because they weren't in school yet, as I can remember. And so they were playing, and we thought, well, we'll just, maybe they'd like to see this video. So we said, you know, would you guys like to watch a video? And, you know, we didn't show our kids bad videos. I mean, we showed them mostly Disney stuff, you know. This little boy, I don't even remember what video it was, but this little boy said, oh, no, I can't watch that video. I'm not allowed to watch videos. My parents don't allow me to watch those kinds of videos. I'm thinking, what kind of video? Holy cow, Disney. But he decided, I mean, he had that filter going on. His parents at 4 years old already had instilled in him or had installed in him this God filter. And even before we showed him the video, he said, no, I can't see. Just the title of the video, apparently, was enough to say, I can't watch that. I mean, this four-year-old boy, I mean, Kim and I were convicted by this four-year-old boy. It's so important for your children to recognize the difference between godly wisdom and worldly wisdom and to choose godly wisdom, to know this is right and this is wrong. The only way that's going to happen is if your child learns who God is and develops a healthy respect or fear of God and His Word. That's why we offer children's Bible classes. You know, we want to help you parents. We want to help you to instill and install that filter in your children. If you're not bringing them to class, then you better be teaching them at home. Otherwise, they may never develop the fear or respect for God that they need, they desperately need. Fear is not bad when it comes to knowing God. It is good. In fact, it's necessary. So going back to Proverbs 9:10, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is insight. And the following two verses, 11 and 12, elaborate on verse 10. For by me your days will be multiplied and years will be added to your life. If you are wise, you are wise for yourself. If you scoff, you alone will bear it. So Solomon was saying, fearing God will bless your life. It'll make you wise. It's kind of ironic that the fear of something or someone can create courage. A courage to shun the wrong and do the right. So teaching your child to know God and fear God will bless their lives and yours more than anything else you can teach them. It will place them on the right path so that hopefully their character will not deform into a fool, which we talked about last month or so. Because we know that every human being will choose his own or her own path in life, and the odds of choosing the right path increases significantly when parents lead them in the right path early in life. Remember the words of Moses. Words of Moses, Deuteronomy 6, these are the words of God through Moses. They're still applicable today. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be on your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down, when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. In other words, do whatever you have to do to teach your children about God and His will. Do it. Do whatever you have to do. Some of you may or may not have known a preacher by the name of George Bailey. He ended up becoming the father-in-law of my wife's former college roommate at Abilene. But he was a gospel preacher for many, many years in Texas. And he recently passed away. I think he was probably in his 90s, I think. And one of his granddaughters said this about him on a Facebook post. She said, "Did you know my grandfather memorized the entire Bible? We would play this game with him by opening up the Bible when he was doing chores or other jobs. We would read wherever we opened the Bible, and he would continue it. We'd have to stop him so that we could close the Bible and start all over again. It was fascinating. He never once got it wrong, which was equally amazing. Papa George would sit and read his Bible for hours every day, and I asked him later at dinner, 'Papa, why do you constantly read your Bible if you've memorized the whole Bible?' I thought I was being funny and clever, but I'll never forget his answer, because every time I open his Word, he reveals something else to me." Now, he obviously had a gift, but my point is, over time, as you read the Word, God will reveal something else to you as well. Something that you may desperately need. Folks, we've got to be in the Word a lot. It's the words of life. So may I suggest you take the next steps on your communication card this morning. Memorize Deuteronomy 9:10 again. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. The knowledge of the Holy One is insight. Read Deuteronomy 6:4-9 again, which I just read to you. And take or accept the teaching challenge. Teach your children or grandchildren if you have any. If you don't have any, you can teach other people's children and grandchildren through Bible classes here at church. If you don't really want to teach children, then teach your friends. We've been talking about that for almost a year now. If you don't have any friends, then teach yourself. Learn the will of God. Practice it, because it will save you from the wrath of God that's coming. You know, a lot of us who are in here this morning may not be so much because we love God with all of our heart, soul, mind, and strength, but because we fear Him. And if we're to be very frank with one another, some of us serve God more out of fear or obligation than love, but that's okay, because the beginning of wisdom, fear is the beginning of wisdom. And the fear of God should compel you to submit yourself to Him, because someday we're going to face the judgment. And I want to be sure I've done everything I could do when I stand there on that day. It's because I owe it to him, not because it'll qualify me, but because I owe it to him for what he's done for me. So submission begins, of course, with obeying the gospel. Many of us know that in here. And now's the time to do that. As we stand and sing this song, as David leads us in this last song, it's an opportunity for you to respond. It's an opportunity for you to say, yes, I'm going to obey the gospel because I know God's wrath is coming. And I know he's a loving, merciful God. And he will forgive me of my sins. And yes, he's waiting to do that this morning because he didn't appoint you for wrath. He appointed you for salvation. And he wants to give that to you today. And it's your opportunity to receive it as we stand and as we sing. David?